Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady. Live only on Netflix.
Welcome to Sharing Socks, the Tony La Russa video edition, thanks to WGN. I am Southside Sox duty geezer Lee Allen, and with me my son and West Coast correspondent Will, and behind him a picture of the tarp over the stadium at Progressive Field, where they are not playing baseball today. It's supposed to be game four of the Cleveland series, as it turns out. Sox lost two out of three, despite a really dramatic finish to game number three. Meanwhile, speaking of really dramatic, I just watched the video that WGN got through a Freedom of Information Act request of Tony La Russa's greatest hit, and it was pretty interesting. There wasn't new information there, really. It's a video, very short, of La Russa's arrest for DUI last year. And did you see it?
I didn't watch it. I just didn't. That's why I told you to watch it. I was like, I'm not watching this crap, and one of us has to watch it. So,
well, a couple of things. It was fun to watch La Russa in handcuffs, but and hear him pulling his Hall of Famer baseball person thing. Although I will say he didn't shout it. I actually thought he must have shouted it. He didn't. He was just kind of mumbling. I'll tell you, it's only a 0.9, which is not, you know, drunk. It's just enough to be a DUI.
Well, I would hope it would be a 0.09 versus a 0.9. If he's looking at 1% of his blood being alcohol. No,
okay, we'll go with the other one. He looks pretty gone.
I did see that in the stills. Yeah,
and you know, the two times that he's been arrested. Once he passed out in his car at an intersection, they couldn't help but arrest him. And in this one, he blew out a tire going over a curb. You don't know how many hundreds. There may have been none in between. There may have been none. This was just freak occurrences. But the chances are, I think 1 in 80 drunk drivers gets caught. Chances are there were lots and lots of times where he managed to get home without smashing into anything or passing out. But the most fun thing of the video was that there were two cops eventually. And one of them obviously was not a baseball fan. He had no clue. Even when he was going, oh, Hall of Fame, I'm legit, I'm Hall of Fame. That guy's got no idea. So the other cop is explaining to him, he's kind of like the Michael Jordan of baseball. Which I think is a little strange. Because, you know, he's a Hall of Fame. He's got World Series rings, you know. Most valuable manager. So he's explaining all this. Okay.
Yeah. If you didn't know who he was and someone told you that guy's the Michael Jordan of baseball, you would determine right then and there to never watch baseball for the rest of your life. You would look at that and be like, wait, that guy's the MJ?
It was an interesting choice.
I get what the guy was trying to say, but La Russa is not even the Phil Jackson of baseball. You know, he doesn't have that many titles. He's not that good at it. That is really, really funny. This guy's a Michael Jordan. Does he actually say that? Do you hear him say that?
Yes.
Oh, my gosh. That's amazing. Do you know if La Russa heard it? Did he hear it? And he was like, that's right.
Well, he was. It appeared that La Russa at that time was handcuffed in the back seat and kind of hanging his head down over.
Right, right.
How much he made out.
That is the funniest thing I've heard in all of this. Obviously, DUI is not funny at all. But hearing a cop try to explain to another cop who Tony La Russa is as he's drunk in the back seat and refers to him as the Michael Jordan of baseball is just – you can't write it better than that. You can't write it. If you saw that in a play, you would be like, this guy's never seen a baseball game in his life. This playwright's a hack. La Russa, the Michael Jordan of baseball? Come on. Michael Jordan wasn't the Michael Jordan of baseball.
Well, maybe that's what he meant by Michael Jordan of baseball.
Yeah, that's true. That's true. Yeah, he's on the scene for a little while and then messes up and decides to go do something else. Yeah, maybe that's what he was talking about.
Meanwhile, and it was interesting. I some stuff that I've seen, there was some reference to the DUI, and it was on MLB trade rumors. And boy, he got a lot of defenders on there. And you started reading through more and more of them, and it was all because it was the .9. Just, oh, no, that's not wrong. That's not even wrong. You can tell that these guys who have been arrested on DUIs before, they're defending anybody who ever got it. It was a fascinating little bit there.
Or if anyhow, they have, and things, or even if they haven't been, they know that they have driven at over .09. So they're just, you know, it really is crazy, his defenders. And, you know, Stone was defending La Russa yesterday on Twitter, not about that, just in general, and having some pretty nasty interactions with some fans. He did then come on and apologize and say that they had lost their, I think, dog that morning, and he was just, like, in a really terrible mood. And, you know, I thought it was really cool that he gave the reasoning for these interactions. And, you know, he was defending La Russa as a manager, not necessarily a person, but was saying, like, all you guys do is critique and attack this guy, and here we are. And then he came on later and, you know, said the thing about his dog, which is very valid. He was in a bad mood. He was having some bad fan interactions. The fans don't make it easy on Steve Stone on Twitter. You know, it's become pretty clear that if Steve and I were to sit down and talk about politics, it wouldn't go well. But he is also a huge proponent of leaving all that stuff out of it. But it was really interesting to see him defend La Russa and then come back on and sort of backtrack a little bit in terms of his tone in defending La Russa. But yeah, I mean, seeing La Russa in handcuffs, even in that still, was great. I wish he was in handcuffs all the time because it would keep him from doing this to the bullpen. When he's making a terrible bullpen decision, which he has been prone to do this year. But anyway, moving on.
Speaking of those, though, if we go to just the most recent series with Cleveland in Game 3, where the Sox had about this close to a comeback, a miracle comeback in the ninth inning, the manager who really, really screwed up is the future Hall of Fame manager. How Terry Francona left Karinchak in there when he gave 42 hits and 16 walks, and he's still out there on the mound, not finding the plate anywhere. And I really think it's only because Mercedes has been in the huge slump ever since La Russa badmouthed him and everything. I think that's why Jose was swinging into 2-0 pitch last night with the bases loaded against a guy who can't find the plate, because it was that thing that Jose gets into of, I've got to win this, or yeah, it's not going to get done.
Well, he won.
Mercedes is 4-for-40, last 41 or something like that. I mean, you know, over 18 or 20, whatever it is, it's just awful. So I think Jose figured, I've got to get it done and not just tie it. I got to win this. And when he does that, he tends to swing at some pitches that maybe it wasn't a good idea to swing at.
Yeah, that was really, really bad at bat. Just shocking to cut it 2-0 on this. And yeah, I think you're exactly right. It's Jose getting in this is the chance to win. I've got to win it. When in reality, Karinchak probably does walk him in that at bat and tie the game. Speaking of Karinchak, though, what did you think about Stone pointing out the black substance in Karinchak's glove?
Well, it was very quick in a way, and yeah, it was interesting.
It was really interesting.
What apparently is going, although it's interesting because he wasn't able to pitch at all anyway, but it apparently, from everything I'm able to see and read, is now almost universal.
Yeah, I agree.
Doctoring the ball is just what is being done. And there's some recommendation that if you stop that, you really, really stopped it, that it would put some more balance into pitcher versus batter.
Here's why I think it's interesting. Is that Stone brought it up late in the game. He saw it happening. And what's interesting to me is the mindset of pretty much everyone is doing this tells me that Stone saw something a little above what everyone else has been doing. And he was saying, you know, there's black substance in a red glove. You know, you're not even trying to hide that you're cheating. And there's nothing in the news about it at all today. Nobody seemed to care. But I thought it was really fascinating that Stone brought that up and pointed that out at such a key moment, because he is not one to accuse people of really anything. And to see that at that moment really made me think, you know, something's up with this. I'm not a conspiracy guy, but you know, Karen Check, who is oddly enough a conspiracy theory guy, if you go down his rabbit hole, you know, Karen Check, for all better words, seems like he's bonkers, and seems like maybe a guy who would potentially do a little cheating. So I don't know what's going to come of that, but you know, I kind of liked them the other day that against the Cardinals. There was that uproar about policing the hat. I thought that made sense. I thought, you got to police the hat. Why does the hat look like that? Police it. And the manager immediately defending the pitcher makes me think, yes, of course he was cheating. And then seeing it with Karinchak, you know, it is a huge problem if it's becoming the norm. Because the last thing these pitchers need in terms of their advantage over the hitters is a way to doctor this ball that they're already able to put insane spin rates on. And again, I agree that probably a lot of guys are doing it, but we got to put an end to that. And I think you're right that there's a good chance that if you can get people to stop doctoring the ball, you're going to see breaking balls that are a lot easier to hit. And that could level out some of this competitive advantage that the pitchers have over the hitters right now. But I was really surprised that he said it. And I think it's something that we really need to keep track of, and I admire him for pointing it out. We'll see what happens with it, but I did not like the look of that substance in the glove. You know, as he was saying, there are substances you see on pitchers and on hitters too that are perfectly legal substances that they use for whatever reason, whether it's rosin or pine tar, whatever. But a black spot in a red glove it doesn't look good. And I'm a little surprised we're not seeing more about it today in the news. There's nothing about it from what I can tell. But that's something to keep an eye on for sure. Because Stone pointing it out, not that I think he's, you know, almighty, but I do listen to him a lot. And I thought it was really interesting for him to point that out on TV late in the game.
Meanwhile, we had a couple of pitchers really struggle in this series. Carlos Rodon had his second bad game of the year. Dylan Cease, it's more common to see him struggle. He was really couldn't get anything done. Got bailed out by some excellent relief work through the course of game three of the series, which brings the question of what happens when Jace Fry is done with his rehab, which apparently is going to be very soon. Who goes down?
Right.
I'm going to guess Matt Foster. Seems like the logical one. Ruiz has gotten hit. He didn't get hit yesterday. We're recording Wednesday. But he had given up, I think, a run in five straight games before that. But Ruiz is out of options. So you can't send Ruiz down. He goes on irrevocable waivers, and he's gone. Somebody will take him. Whereas you can send Foster down, and he's younger and more of a chance you work with him and get him to improve. He's been very, very bad. I mean, they're basically never pitching him now, except in games with big run spreads already. So I think
you move Foster down for sure. You don't want to lose Ruiz. I know that he hasn't been great, but he is a guy that you need guys who you can bring in low leverage situations. Not every reliever is coming into a high leverage situation. I don't think he's a high leverage guy, but you know, if you got to get through five innings and you have a six run lead, seven run lead, You need guys like Ruiz who, yeah, maybe they're going to give up one over an inning or two. That's fine. Foster right now just can't get anybody out. And I'm not giving up on Foster. I actually think Foster has some interesting talent, but he really needs to go back to the minors and work on that outside of a big league setting, because you're not going to work on it in the big league setting. You're going to go out and get smoked. You know, this is it's the pros. So you don't have the opportunities to really work on your stuff mid-season in a relief capacity. He's got to go down to the minor leagues, work on it. Ruiz, I think, is a guy who's not going to be great. He was performing above what he's capable of early on. That was hugely helpful to us, as a lot of our relievers were performing way under what we expected. But I think Foster goes down. I think it's a no-brainer.
And then you've got Kopech coming off the IL apparently very soon, within the next week. And the guy who came up to fill in, Ryan Burr, on Tuesday, not only pitched really well, but turned into Mark Burley or Harvey Haddix or anyone else out there on a great dive to catch what was a very bad bunt, but which would have been a hit anyway if it had landed on the ground. After a short pop-up situation. So I guess he'll go back down when Kopech comes back up. But there are other alternatives there, too. There are some guys who are not pitching very well.
I think, unfortunately for Burr, he is going to go down. You could never convince me ever that we should have him up instead of Kopech, which I know is not what you're saying, but Kopech's spot is secure on the
team. No, he's coming back. That's for just a question of who else will go down. Well, we're talking about ups and downs. Let's see, we got Detroit coming up, that hardly counts as a major league series, and then Toronto, which will be very interesting challenge because we are nicely under 500 against any teams that are over it, and that's one tough team coming out of the American League East. But let's come back and talk about what happens with Adam Engel.
Right. Yeah. So let's take a quick break. And when we come back, we'll talk about who's going where, who's moving. It is going to be a wild ride of trying to figure out how the hell to put this team back together once these guys start coming back. But let's take a quick break. And we will be right back on Sharing Socks. All right, welcome back to Sharing Socks. We just kind of talked about musical chairs in the bullpen, and now we're going to talk about musical chairs in the dugout. So we got Adam Engel potentially coming back. Adam Engel, who has been potentially coming back for months now,
months.
It seems like. Yeah. It just seems like we're always 1 week away from Adam Engel.
Mysteriously, Charlotte had to get their whole league took Memorial Day off. That seems weird. It seems like a day you'd want to play baseball. But then Tuesday night, he did not play. He's hitting 375, so it's not like he was benched. So I don't know if that means anything. They just had some guy that wanted to get in there. I thought maybe he was already packing his bags to come to Chicago.
Yeah.
But there's no indication of that on the White Sox sites. But he's
my guess would be that is what was happening, that they liked what they saw. I mean, they know he's a pro player. He doesn't need a long workout in the minors as long as he's healthy. So my guess would be that they said, make sure this guy doesn't get hurt. We'll see him next week. I think we're going to have Engel up very soon. Again, I think that every week. So we'll see what happens. But what do you do? What's your move when Engel comes back?
Well, of course, we agreed last week on this very show that the guy who has to go is Jake Lamb, who proceeded then to hit 500 with about, I don't know, 26 homers in the last week and to make a great diving catch in right field. So apparently the clue, and we need to get word of this to White Sox management because we could get paid for this. Every time we badmouth a guy, he turns terrific. Now, the alternative is if we speak really well of someone, he tends to struggle. So we'll try to stay away from that. But Lamb apparently is going to stick around. Billy Hamilton, thank goodness, because I love Billy Hamilton, has proven that he's got to stay.
Yeah, Billy's got it at this point. I mean, the home runs are the home runs, you know, whatever. But the fact is, the guy's hitting better than we ever thought he would, and he is electric in the field. So,
and on the bases.
And on the, I mean, on the bases, he's such a crucial thing to have in your back pocket. The guy is lightning fast. Everyone knows this. I'm just saying stuff we all know out loud, but Billy has earned his spot. You get rid of Billy now, which would be the Reinsdorf move. It would be the La Russa move to send Billy down, and bring up Engel, but it's not going to happen. Billy Hamilton's here to stay. My thought on Lamb is bye-bye.
I still think that's the best choice, but I don't think it can happen because he's now got one of the highest batting averages and OPSs on the team, granted in a very small sample size. So we then get, we got Mendick. We got Leury. And those probably are what it's going to – well, the one I think really should go down because I think he's done. I think he's finished. It's Eaton.
Yeah, but I agree.
That is not going to happen. You're paying him $8 or $9 million. He's not going anywhere. As soon as Eaton going down crossed my mind, he hit the two-run homer that won the game in one of the doubleheader games.
Exact same thing with me. Right when he came up to bat, I was like, I had the thought of, you know who really should go down? Adam Eaton. What does this guy do? And then, of course, he had the huge home run. Adam Eaton quits baseball forever the second you send him down. So if you send Adam Eaton down, you're just ending your tenure with Adam Eaton, which I'm fine with, but they won't be fine with. No. So Eaton is going to stay. Maybe it's not a bad thing to have one player who can – speak to Tony. I don't know. Mendick really makes sense to send down. I like Mendick. I think he's good. I also think he's good. Interesting trade bait. Leury has been very underwhelming, but he's so useful to have as a guy who can really come in and play every position but catcher and maybe first, but he probably play first better than Lamb did. So I do think Mendick is probably going to be the one that goes down. And I don't necessarily think it's a bad thing for Mendick. You know, Mendick is – he's not a great pro player. He was a Gold Glove finalist. I get that somehow. But, you know, I just don't know. I just don't know that he's really a guy that we need to keep up here. And I think maybe another team would want him at the deadline.
It's interesting. I looked at some defensive evaluations this morning, and defensive ratings are so bizarre. The Sox, just on Fangraphs itself, at the top in Uzer and near the bottom in defensive runs saved. How can that be? I don't understand how that can happen that way. But negative defensively, despite the fact that they make the occasional nice grab, Lamb, of course, very negative defensively. Leury is negative defensively. Vaughn is. Jose is, but I think that's from early season. He had four errors in the first couple of weeks.
Yeah, he did not start well.
I don't know if his hands were cold or what, but he's been just fine. He's been last year's Jose, since then playing extremely well. Catchers, of course, they're very negative. Yeah, they get some framing points. They can't throw anybody out.
Can't throw anybody out, and they're still committing interference regularly.
They commit interference. They've got more than average pass balls and wild pitches. Other than the framing, frankly, if they go to electronic umpires, strike zone stuff there, I probably don't need either one of these guys. Although Grandal, I saw this too, has highest on-base percentage by somebody hitting 130-ish in history by about 100 points.
It would have to be. I'm looking at it right now. His on-base percentage is 385. It's insane. Plus, his walks to strikeouts is 1-1. He's actually got more walks than strikeouts still, 42-40, which is just wild. I do want to just take a second so I don't forget to just, you know, say that all those Moncada, there has been some Moncada haters on Sox.
You're kidding. How could you?
Early on this year. People saying, oh, Moncada's overrated. Moncada's this. Moncada has been my guy from day one. I defend Moncada endlessly on Twitter. He's my favorite player on the team right now. I honestly think the guy has potential to be a top five player regularly in Major League Baseball. And I just love that my boy, Yoan Moncada, is stepping up. He's proven me right. He's now batting over 300. His on-base percentage is 430, which is just incredible. We talk about Grandal getting 42 walks. Moncada has 38 walks already. And
oh, my goodness. I didn't realize that.
Yeah, they're not pitching around him. This is just good, disciplined hitting. He is leading the team in strikeouts. I will admit he's got 61 strikeouts. But a lot of that is front-loaded on the season. And now we see him up here. He's got 38 walks. His on-base percentage is 430. He's hitting at key moments. He's hitting all over the field. He's hitting all types of hits, singles, doubles, home runs. I mean, the guy is just – he might be the most underrated player in all of Major League Baseball right now, despite how, you know, for a while everyone's saying he's going to be the next great player.
I've got a remedy for him defensively, too, because, you know, his throws are always perfect when he's on the dead run in whatever direction. But if he's standing still, I think Jose's going to end up really hurt stretching for some of these throws. So I think Moncada has to catch the ball, even if he's just standing there when he catches it. He has to run real hard and throw it.
I mean, I always felt that way when I was playing. When I would play shortstop, if you're running hard toward the ball, there's something about it that just makes it so much easier to really rocket a throw over. I'm sure it has to do with momentum and the way you're looking, you're focusing so intensely on your target. It is really shocking how much worse he is at throwing when he stands still. But I get it. I get it. And I hope he can work it out where he can be just as good not on the move. Because on the move, he's the best third baseman in baseball. And you can challenge me on that all you want. I will not budge. On the move, Yoan Moncada is the most valuable third baseman in baseball. He's covering ground. He's making great stops. His throws are, you know, hitting Jose in the chest at 90 miles an hour every time. It's really incredible. But it is also incredible how bad his throws are when he's just standing there. But, you know, that again, this is a good opportunity for sports psychologists because that is all mental. It is all mental.
The other thing that he's had the big problem with is pop-ups where somebody else is involved. I mean, he just either wants it and runs into somebody or decides he doesn't want it and it drops. I don't know.
But what I will say, though, is the whole team has been really terrible at it. They have been little league bad at figuring out who gets what ball. And that you can see them know that they're doing a terrible job because it happens so frequently right now. And Moncada is a culprit, but, you know, Abreu's a culprit some of the time. Anderson's a culprit some of the time.
What saves it on the right side is that Abreu is so much taller than Madrigal, he just reaches over him and takes it.
Exactly.
And otherwise, you know, they'd collapse.
And you know that if Madrigal and Abreu collide, only one of them's getting hurt. Madrigal, he'll be in the ICU, but Abreu will be fine. He'll just catch the ball, move on with his day. But it does bring me to two things. You know, we have this manager who's supposed to be the, like, baseball fundamentals god, whatever. And the biggest problems on the team are guys not stretching, apparently, because all we have is hamstring injuries all the time. And guys not calling for pop-ups. I'm like, what's going on? Like, what's going on this team that we got guys who are constantly getting hurt? And then we got guys who are constantly about to run into each other catching pop-ups. It's ridiculous. It's kind of kind of the most confounding thing about this team is that is how we can be so fundamentally unsound right now.
Without Aloy out there.
Without Aloy. Which, you know, I mean, even Luis Robert taking one off the dome at the beginning of the year, which, you know, you'll never be able to convince me that he's not an amazing fielder. But even that moment was like, what the hell just happened? What's going on out here with these pop-ups? I hate to say it, these guys need practice. They need to be having long defensive practices where they're all just out there figuring out who calls for what fly ball when who's on base, like all the stuff you do for JV practice in high school. Because it's really bizarre. It's really bizarre how bad they are at calling for pop-ups and figuring out who should be getting what and when. And they're letting, you know, the second in command guy take the pop-up over the guy who should always call it in that scenario, which is so weird to me, you know, that a guy running back out of the infield is catching pop-ups, and by the time he gets there, the outfielder's just standing next to him. Well, no, that's the outfielder's ball 100 out of 100 times. And yet we've got our infielders catching the ball or missing the ball. And you've got your outfielders right there. Adam Eaton did it the other day. There's a ball going back. Abreu just missed it. It was foul, fortunately, but he just missed it. Eaton standing right there. Well, why the hell is Adam Eaton not calling that ball from the start? These are professional outfielders. They know they can get to that ball. They should be calling it. And then if they don't get to it, it's on them. And I think that's what it is. These guys just, you know, a part of it too probably is you got Andrew Vaughn in left field. So Tim Anderson and Yoan Moncada aren't necessarily trusting that Andrew Vaughn is going to get to a ball in time, which, you know, they could be right about. But you still got to make the kid try to be the one to get the ball. You know, if he's going to be your left fielder, you got to make him get those balls. It's really weird, man. It is really weird. And you can see in Moncada's body language, Anderson's body language, Abreu's body language, that they know it's weird. They know it's really weird that they're miscommunicating like this. I think there's a lot of miscommunication issues on this team right now. And that is really strange for a team that clearly gets along extraordinarily, that they're having those kinds of things. And it could stem from liking each other too much, which I know sounds crazy, but it could be, okay, well, if the infielder called it, I don't want to piss him off, you know, because they can jaw at each other when they call each other off out there. But we got to get back to the point where, you know, we're letting the guys who are supposed to be calling the ball, supposed to have the right of way on these pop-ups, just take them. You know, like Rodon really wanted that pop-up the other day. Well, what the hell are you doing, Carlos? You know, yeah. Come on, man. When was the last time that a high pop-up, they just let the pitcher catch it? This is just weird stuff. This is just strange mental mistakes and miscues. I don't get it. I don't like seeing it, though. It's a young team, but they're not 13. You know, they're young, but they're mid-20s. They should be able to communicate well on pop-ups at this point.
That's probably as good a place as any to end.
Yeah, it's something to keep an eye on as we move forward because, you know, it's not obvious stuff necessarily in terms of giving away runs, but these things give away runs. These things give people an extra swing when you miss it in foul territory. You give them a strange hit or you let someone advance a base they shouldn't advance because the guy going backwards caught the ball instead of the guy coming forward. And it's just really weird stuff. And, you know, it just adds to my thought that, you know, what is La Russa really doing to coach these guys? You know,
we're running out of it. What's Jerry Nairn do? Wasn't he supposed to be brought up to be a catching guru? Or is it just that I hold La Russa's hand? Is that his entire purpose? Because I don't see any catcher guruing going on.
None whatsoever. Anywhere. And the catchers get worse every week.
Yes, you know, Zach's framing is better than it has been in the past, but that's been since the start of spring training. It's not like he's developed it.
But also,
and they still won't give Mercedes a chance to catch, despite what's happening in a game.
And framing this year, irrelevant, because there's no strike zones. The strike zone calling, the umpiring behind the plate this year has been mind-blowingly terrible. Just brutally bad. So framing, who cares? You can frame a ball in the dirt and they might call it a strike. You can frame a ball over someone's head, they might call it a strike. Who knows? But I agree. The catching guru has been he has not been goo or roo. He has been doing neither of those things. Our catchers are not great at all. And I would love to see Yermin get a shot, just because if Yermin can't turn it around offensively, I hate to say it, but Yermin's tenure is on its way to a close. If he can't turn it around.
Yeah, I mean, if it keeps going as it is and he's down around 250 or 240, he does not become useful. And then he becomes the guy that goes down when the next person comes back.
Which, of course, is a tough thing to do, you know, when he was the savior early on in the season.
Oh, yeah.
And he has
become a huge fan favorite.
Big fan favorite. The fan favorite. So I hope he gets out of it. You know, last week we were on here and I said, Yermin, we believe in you. You're going to be just fine. And he actually had a really great day after that. So I'm going to will it out there again. And I'm going to say, here on Sharing Socks, we are pro Yermin. We believe in you. We think you're going to come back. You're not going to be a 400 hitter, but we'll take you at 285, 290. You still give us a lot of value. We love you, Yermin. And we'll see you next time on Sharing Socks.